Welcome to Digital First Leadership, the podcast that focuses on helping leaders and teams understand how to master the language of social media in today's digital first world.
In this episode, Richard speaks with Jared Carroll, a longtime friend and author of upcoming book on confronting racism. Jared is a self-described facilitator of difficult conversations, and an inclusive leadership coach who aids corporations in expanding and addressing diversity. Richard and Jared explore topics around diversity and inclusivity and the importance of seeing humanity in every person. Jared provides guidance around difficult conversations and in his book outlines four ways to approach confronting racism.
This is Richard Bliss, and welcome to the show. In this episode, I've invited a good friend of mine, Jared Carroll, who's joined us because Jared and I have had conversations in the time that we've known each other on a wide range of topics. But one of them really is about diversity and inclusivity, particularly in today's digital first world and how that impacts it. And Jared, I just want to say thank you and welcome to the show.
Richard, so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's always fun. And we always have great conversations. Now, you're here because I'm excited for you. You have a book coming out, right?
I do. I do have a book. As we were just talking about before we went on air, a penciled in date of September 29th is where we're aiming for. And it's called A White Guy, which is me, A White Guy Confronting Racism. And the subtitle is An Invitation to Reflect and Act.
So that's an interesting title and an interesting approach because you're going to be talking about racism. So let's talk a little bit about your background. And also, September 29th is a significant date, right?
It is. So it's the anniversary of my dad's death. He died on September 29th, 2000. He was a gay man. He died. He was HIV positive, and he died from complications of AIDS. And his death, and we can explore this a little bit more in our conversation, but his life and death really was the catalyst for me to get into this work, you know, almost 21 years ago now.
So when you were growing up, were you aware that your father was gay?
I wasn't, which is, so, you know, this will give my age away, but I was 14 in 1988, and I was visiting my dad in San Francisco. I grew up in San Diego, and my parents had divorced when I was two. My dad moved to LA and then later to San Francisco, and I'd come up to the city and like, oh, cool, San Francisco, and you know, all the things from that a suburban kid would like. And we were finishing up a weekend trip, and you know, it was the usual, hey, we're going to take you down to the airport, and he usually kind of, you know, did a, hey, I love you, Jared, you know, I wish we could spend more time together, you know, the whole thing that any 14-year-old kid doesn't really want to hear. But then it got worse, quote unquote, because he said, you know, Tom, the guy who takes us to the airport, because my dad didn't drive, he said, Tom is my friend. And I said, well, yeah, that makes sense. Like, he's like, and John, the guy we'd hung out with all weekend and I'd, you know, known for maybe 6-8 months, he said, John is my boyfriend. I'm gay. So here I am, this 14-year-old, you know, kid, freshman in high school, the late 80s, Reagan's still president, the stigma, you know, it was just a big thing. So I cried. I was confused, embarrassed, ashamed. I went back, you know, down to San Diego. I didn't tell anyone all the way through high school until finally about midway through college, I told someone.
And so I assume based on the book and everything that your relationship with your father, it didn't end it. It didn't damage it. It was just something that you built on that yeah, personal connection that was there.
Exactly. And so, you know, when I was 20, I was visiting my best friend, Amy, in Colorado. She went to University of Colorado. And we were camping one night. And I said, Amy, I got to tell you something. And she's kind of like, what, dude, you're being weird. And I said, you know, my dad's gay. And she said, big deal. Well, actually, she said big effing deal. But I don't know if we can curse on this,
right,
podcast. And so I'm 20 years old. I'm a college athlete. I'm, you know, the party cool guy. Not about to have a gay dad, you know, in my life, right? So I tell
her, those macho friends, right?
Exactly, yeah. And she says, you know, big deal. I'm like, oh, really? And she, yeah, my uncle's gay and this and that. She was so much more advanced than I was, and she gave me permission to see myself, my dad, the LGBT community, and just, you know, people with more humanity, more, you know, inclusivity, more understanding, more curiosity. So that really opened up, you know, kind of my mind. And so through my 20s is when I, you know, started to kind of outgrow that, you know, that persona that I had boxed myself into. And, you know, by the time I was starting to be pretty cool with it, that's when my dad passed away. And I said, well, you know what? It's time for me to really make that switch. And I said, you know, I was living in San Diego at the time. I moved to San Francisco. I started teaching, and, you know, the rest is history.
So that's interesting, because then they're from the LGBTQ community to now a book on racism. And what it is, so we have the book coming out, but that is not your day job, right? You help organizations understand how to deal with or to work with diversity, inclusivity in their organizations.
Right. So it is and it isn't my day job. I mean, writing, I mean, we'll see what happens when the book comes out, right? Like maybe
right.
it'll turn into my day job. But yeah, the connection was, as I mentioned, this failure to see each person, no matter who they are, what their background is, what their dimensions of diversity, you know, as human, to see the humanity in every person. And so through my dad, you know, he's a white man, but he's a gay white man, I started to see like, oh, like I can drop this baggage, this narrative that I have around myself, around other people, around how we can interact. And that opened it up. So yeah, it started with the LGBT community, and I started being more curious and, you know, reading and listening. And, you know, the internet was kind of new at that, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s, but started, you know, doing some research and like, oh, and just kind of grew. And then I made the connection like, all right, so the LGBTQ community has its own historical marginalization, you know, oppression challenges that are unique to that community. And they're similar in ways to other communities that have been oppressed, marginalized throughout history, including the Black community. And so it kind of became this intense interest in social justice. And then, you know, over the years, especially the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, the emphasis on race really, it seemed to be more and more the most, I don't know, compelling and urgent issue.
Yeah,
and then fast forward to, you know, fast forward to 2020 and, you know, everything, you know, the poop hit the fan. And that's when I said, you know what, I got something to say here that needs to be said from someone like me, not only from someone like me, but there are so few white people, and especially white men, who are talking about this stuff with any sort of fluency and urgency and, you know, authenticity. And, you know, there's so few compelling voices that I kind of stepped in to fill that void.
So let's talk about the book then, because you've structured it into four, if I understand, four sections, right? Four key ways to approach this conversation. What are those?
Yeah. Well, there are actually 10 chapters, but those have their own thing. But there are, to your point, there are four kind of through lines, if you will.
Okay.
And I make it very clear in the first chapter, which I call my approach to confronting racism. And in the very first kind of little snippet, the little vignette, is social justice. So really understanding that what's going on now in corporations, in society, has been going on for, you know, for centuries. And very intentionally so. So really having an understanding that we have to look at what's going on now is not just a one-time thing, but a thing that's been going on for decades and centuries. So social justice, having a knowledge of that, or an awareness and appreciation. The second part is the EQ, right? We talk about, we talk about D&I or DEI, whatever the acronym we use, as, you know, programs and trainings and unconscious bias.
So hang on, let's make sure the audience understands. You threw out a whole bunch of acronyms, DEI, EQ. But what are we talking about here?
All right, thank you for slowing me down. DEI, so diversity, equity, inclusion. Sometimes there's a B, like where I'm working right now, it's D-I and B. So that's diversity, inclusion, and belonging. And so you'll see different companies have different acronyms depending on whatever they feel, you know, they want to emphasize in their work. And so much of that work really is the emotional intelligence, EQ, right? How do we communicate with each other? How do we show empathy and compassion? How do we believe the lived experiences of people who are different than us, who have different backgrounds, racial, gender, et cetera? So really centering that emotional intelligence, sitting with discomfort, staying in conversations. And the third pillar, which is closely related, is mindfulness, right? So often whether we're stressed or, you know, whatever the factors that come in to these relationships, we don't pause enough. we don't take the time to really, you know, just stop and interrupt our thoughts and our storylines and our narratives about ourselves, about each other, about other people, etc. And then the fourth part, the fourth pillar, which again, these are all kind of interwoven, is storytelling. How do we individually and collectively and organizationally tell stories and shape narratives that are inclusive, that are true, that are representative of different voices, not just the dominant voice, which so often is a straight white male in many cases voice. And it's not that that voice isn't welcome or important or included. It's just, it's not the only voice. So my work is trying to help people understand all these things so that day to day they create cultures where everyone feels, you know, welcomed, heard, valued, and like they belong.
You know, I've got to admit, it's been, for me, challenging. I have had numerous phone calls where I have wanted to learn, to grow, and to find a way to be a stronger part of the conversation. And that means calling people up and having uncomfortable for me, because I'm talking about things that I don't know where the boundary line is. I don't know where the line is. It even happened today. Where a term was used, I used it, but I didn't know if I was using it properly. And so I used it and then asked the person on the other side, did I use that appropriately? What did we find that? Because I'm trying to find the boundary. Mm-hmm. And those conversations can't happen through just simply what we see on TV or the press or the media. Those are so driven by other issues. And so I find that having those conversations and be able to talk to the people that are impacted. Some of those are my own family members. Some of those are my coworkers. Some of those are people I've worked with in the past, leaders, all of that. Because this issue is, it's bigger than all of us. And it's certainly having a huge impact, particularly because in this world, this is one of the things that we address in our conversations is leadership today with this digital first environment, finding ways to build culture, to include, It's a challenge, right? Because if you are only seeing each other through a Zoom call, for example, my team has grown significantly during 2020. I've never met half of the people who work for me. I have hired them, I pay them, but I have never seen them. I have never touched their hand and shaken their hand. I have never seen their smile other than through a digital medium. And so this is kind of a unique challenge, I think, that we're all facing. At the same time, we're having this discussion about inclusivity and diversity. We're also having a conversation about the tools that are isolating us, yet bringing us together. Yeah. And so it's a very interesting challenge. What a unique time to be living, particularly in this era. So I got to believe that these are some of the challenges that you work with the companies and your clients.
It very much so, Richard. I'm glad. I mean, thank you for your vulnerability and for sharing that. And what you just shared about yourself and your colleagues, and that, you know, we need that type of vulnerability and sharing is a lot of the what we need more of. It might not seem like, oh, well, that's not, you know, DEI and that's not diverse. No, but what is DEI? It's connection, it's humanity, it's trusting people, it's building relationships. And you're right. The challenges are, I mean, I work for, you know, a company we both know. I've been there 13 months as a long-term contract, and I've never met any one of my colleagues either. I've been 100% remote. And I've got people in India and the UK and France and the East Coast and all across the United States, Japan, you know, a couple people here. And what I'm trying to do myself, and trying to model this, and trying to help the people who I coach and the teams who I work with, is take the time to, you know, take 2 minutes out of your call at the beginning of your call to, how's your family doing? How are you doing? You know, for example, when in COVID, still in India is not doing, you know, it's in the United States, especially in California where we live in the Bay Area, it's, you know, it's getting kind of under control and we're starting to feel a little more comfortable. Well, in India, especially back in like April, May, it was scary.
And a, so, member of my team is here in the US, but she is from India.
Yeah.
Her family lives there. And that's one of the conversations we have on a kind of a regular basis. How are they doing? Because she's isolated from them. And even if she wanted to go see them, there's so many barriers into that. So yeah, it's having that, you know, it's interesting because I bring this up all the time. The irony here is that the very tools that have, and the events that have isolated us have also brought us into each other's mm-hmm. lives. Mm-hmm. I have mm-hmm. met, I'm doing this in air quotes. I have met your children, right? Because they happen to walk by on one of our Zoom calls and I talk to it. People have met my cat. Or I have been when the, who was it? Somebody had the plumbers were there. And so we get to hear about the plumbing backup or the air conditioner breaking or the neighbor's problem, right? All of these things that normally would never actually come up in a live conversation. We might tell a story, but these aren't stories. These are events happening as we're getting to know each other. We're being invited into each other's lives on a personal level that has actually bound us to each other in a way. I think that when we go back into the office, or if we do, my team won't, but those that are forced to go back are going to find they are going to be missing this intimate part of their work that for the past 15 months we have all gotten used to. It was weird in the beginning, and now we've all, I mean, in some ways we brace it. And I got to think the introverts of the world are really dreading the extroverts being put back in charge.
Yeah, right? Well, I'll say for myself, I'm an extrovert. I think I would classify you, Richard, as an extrovert. You know, I can talk to anyone, anytime about anything, and I'll, you know, I can take over a conversation if people don't kind of, you know, put the brakes on me. And so, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, talking about, you know, digital first leadership, and I think of that, and, you know, I'm sure you have a very distinct definition of what that means for your company and your brand and how you help your clients. I think of it as both internally, kind of like we've been talking about, like with your teams and how you communicate with each other, especially in this time of a pandemic, but also how leaders and, well, anyone really, and organizations are communicating, you know, via social media and other media, that we have to be talking about this. We don't have to have the answers. It's not, I think that's a common, challenge, problem, frankly, misconception, like, oh, well, I don't have the answer. I don't know what to say about it. So I'm just not going to say anything about it.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what I've had to overcome. Right.
Right. No,
say
and it's
something.
Real. And it's real. And this is where the vulnerability and the EQ, the emotional intelligence comes in. The best thing to say is, hey, I don't know what to say, but I know it's important and I'm working about it and I'm thinking about it. And that might not seem like, you know, and again, I'm using air quotes here now, like leadership, because you don't have the answers and the solution and the, but that's, people want to be heard. There's a colleague of mine, her name's Rachel. We work with, we work together quite a bit, not at the company where you know. And she said, you know, the number one thing that anyone, whatever their seniority, whatever their background, whatever their, you know, their role, that people fear is being irrelevant. And I've been thinking about, she said that maybe a couple of months ago. I've been thinking about it a lot since, that whoever we are, we want to be impactful. We want to be relevant. We want to be helping and doing our job well and being recognized for it. And so if we at any point feel irrelevant in a conversation, so let's talk, you know, about race or about, you know, these DEI subjects that are, you know, uncomfortable for people to talk about. I don't want to jump into that conversation because I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to say the wrong thing. I'm going to make a mistake. I'm going to put my foot in my mouth. I'm going to, you know, so either what do people do? They just avoid it and they're not even in it, or they, you know, they get defensive and they have to try and, you know, tell me what to say, like make sure I say, you know, the right thing, and they get, and they dominate the conversation, and neither way is really that helpful.
Absolutely. Jared, thank you so much. We're out of time, but thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your day. If people wanted to get in contact with you and follow you as the book gets ready to come out, how would they reach out to you or be in contact with you?
Yeah. So website is jaredcarroll.com. So that's jaredcarroll.com. You can find, you know, about me and my work and a link to the book. A pre-link, a pre-order should be up, I would say, probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks, maybe end of, you know, end of July, early August. And then I'm also very active on LinkedIn. So just if you search for me, I don't think there are any other Jared Carrolls out there, which is kind of a nice bonus for me. Connect with me, follow me on LinkedIn. That's really where I'm pretty active. I don't do a whole lot of other social media just for my sanity.
Yeah, right. I can understand that. Jared, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Richard. You're very welcome. Anytime.
You've been listening to Digital First Leadership Podcast. My guest has been Jared Carroll, and I hope you've enjoyed the conversation. And if you have, be sure to continue to follow us as we come out with new episodes and connect with Jared or myself on LinkedIn. We'd love the opportunity to talk to you. Take care.
You've been listening to Digital First Leadership, the podcast where you learn to leverage and build your expertise on digital platforms. For more valuable tips on mastering the language of social media, subscribe to our newsletter at blisspointconsult.com. If you'd like to stay in touch, feel free to add Richard on LinkedIn and join the conversation.